1, 2, 3.
Welcome to the journey, my friends. In the spirit of the retrospective, I think it's important for the team to decide on things that we should keep doing, stop doing, and start doing. I talk a lot about the things we should be doing, maybe starting to do, and offering tips and tricks and guidance to help in the daily life of the product owner. So I think of this episode as things we should maybe keep doing, start doing, and for most of you in the audience, and maybe stop doing, you know, and that's kind of the premise of what we do here. But today, I'm going to chat with you about a few things that we should just stop doing as product owners. And I hopefully want to replace them with some things to start doing. So again, to preface the content and the context here that we're talking with and working with, I again want to remind you that you can take some of this, none of this, or all of this advice here on this podcast, of course. Do with it what you want. Feel free to modify any suggestions. Make it work for you and your team and your organization. I'd remind you that generally speaking on this podcast, these are about thinking patterns. And thinking patterns are just that. They're general thinking patterns. They help you look at things from a different perspective. And I really hope that this podcast and all of these episodes are bringing value to you and your team and helping you on your daily journey. Thanks for joining again. Remember to shoot me an email at scott@planetproductowner.org. Tell 3 friends and get your refreshments from our good friends at JustCoffeeTea.com and use the promo code PLANETPO for a good discount there. So we're going to sit back, buckle up, and get to Planet Product Owner, talk about some things that we have to stop doing and maybe replace it with some things to start doing. So buckle up. Here we go. First thing I want to encourage you to stop doing, product owner, and this is going to hurt somebody's feelings, I know, but you know, that's what we do here, I guess. Stop waiting on work. We already know the dangers of this. You get something presented on the program board. You have been pressured to commit to it. You know it's only 20% defined. You make the commitment and boom, nothing. You know, you're not able to deliver or meet your commitment or bring the value that is needed out of this because maybe we waited on it too long. This got a lot to do with prioritization, at least within the scaled world. We know that. And I know a lot of organizations deal with it. But even with the lack of proper prioritization, we as product owners can make some fairly safe assumptions around what we may expect to be in the next set of priorities. But we got to dig around a little bit. You know the drill, especially if you're in a safe or a scaled agile team type world. You've got opportunities to get on the left side of the board more than you may think, especially if you're in a safe shop, because in the safe guidance, you, product owner, are a part of the product management team. Perhaps your organization doesn't treat you as such, and maybe they do. Really doesn't matter. The point is, I'm not asking you to go rogue here or run the program board or anything like that. I'm just encouraging you to start where you are and start with the features or the epics or the slices of work that you see. So, how do we stop waiting on work to come to us? Well, I'm glad you asked. Here we go. So first, let's recognize the features, the themes, the epics, whatever those work items are that are getting traction on priority. That's the first step. You don't want to spend your time running around chasing things that might not actually get the priority because it may not warrant the attention. You also don't want to ignore it, you know, if it is getting traction. So what works for me best is a cross-check. Right? I want to cross-check between the work item that's proposed on the board, and I want to check that against the KPIs or metrics for the program or the portfolio, wherever you are, right? So those are likely going to be the ones that will get going. I cover a little bit about the politics of all of this in the next segment, or actually maybe even the next segment, sorry. But you probably already have an idea of which features are going to get priority based on political pressure, and which ones are going to get priority by data-driven decision-making. And I hope that it's the latter. I hope that it's data-driven decision-making for your organization for the health of that. So let's get those top work items identified first. And next, you're going to want to get with the author of that feature or that epic or this work item, whatever it is. Who wrote it? All right, who wrote this thing? Who's on the hook for it? You know, I'm willing to bet that if you figure out that part, you'll figure out if this one work item is going to get traction or not. You know, another thing to do is listen to the conversations and who is having those conversations around the organization or around the program. You already know who usually gets the priority. You probably know why they get the priority, right? If you don't have some buckled down, tightly sealed process or method around that, You just got to take time away from working in your work and spend a little more time working on your work. You're probably going to need to do a little background digging around too to see what areas they have their hands in when you figure out this who part, right? And what is in direct competition with the work? What is the supplementary work, the dependency, the predecessor, the enabler? You know, what kind of traction are we getting there? And who authors those? It's important for us to realize that because we want to make sure that we are working on the right things at the right time, and sequencing has a lot to do with that. And I'm going to talk a little more about sequencing too, so be sure to stick around for this entire episode, okay? The outcome here that we want is to find out who, and we want to empathize a little bit to them as to why they're on the hook for it. You know, that's going to help us understand more about the prioritization and help us get on the left side of the board, what I call the left side. Those are the things that are kind of coming through from the funnel to analysis or whatever your process is. Sometimes you're going to find that they're struggling with putting it into the right words or getting the right context for the team to understand. And that might be why you're not seeing it until the last minute. They just don't have a lot of confidence, you know. So they themselves may not understand what their next steps are, and they're having a hard time communicating it over to the team because a lot of people don't want to admit that they're struggling writing this feature or writing this epic. But see, that's where you may be able to come in and save the day, or at least help to save the day. So give them a hand. See how you can help qualify or slice this work for them, or with them, not for them, but with them. Sorry, misspoke. If the value is there and it may get prioritized next, it's getting transaction. Traction. I'm sorry, I keep saying transaction. If it's getting that kind of traction, then you know you're going to help them qualify that, and you're going to be a big part of getting that thing delivered because that's the goal. But even if it's not the very next thing, at least you've gotten engaged. You've helped add a little more quality and clarity around that work item. But more importantly, you are gaining the trust of the rest of the product management team, which again, if you're in SAFE, you're a part of product owner. So don't forget that, okay? I'd say the last thing here about getting on that board and working, you know, not waiting on work to come to you, finally, you know, speak up, right? While you're looking on the left side of that board, you've noticed some things. And look, you're not going to be doing your job if you just sit there and be quiet, if you don't speak up. You're not saying no to some of that stuff that's not ready, right? You're just saying, hey, look, we've got a little work here to qualify this before we make a commitment. I need to know more about the enablement. We don't even have a contract signed yet. This is still in compliance review. This is not something that we can really put our hands on. How can we help each other get it there? And that's what you're wanting to work with here. Why is this getting priority? Why we have other things that seem to be more in line with our metrics or data or KPIs, right? Those are all fair questions. And what's the worst that can happen if you're just asking questions and speaking up, right? You know, and you may think, okay, look, I've done this before and it's not working for me, okay? So it's not going to work maybe the first 4 times. It might not work the first 15 times, but on the 5th time or the 16th time, you know, that's where you may be hitting pay dirt on this thing. So use your voice, use your reason to help this area get better, and stop waiting on work to come to you. Help the whole process, better the whole product, the whole solution, the whole organization, okay? All right, so hang tight with me for the next segment, the next thing we've got to stop doing and maybe start doing. So if you're just joining us, welcome back. We're talking today about things as product owners we should stop doing and maybe some things we should start doing. This one is going to be big. What I want to offer to you next is, man, this is really a tough topic. Stop being politically guarded in your stand-ups and your sprint planning sessions. All this does is result in context switching, which I'm going to talk a little bit about here in another minute or two. And that just results in the lack of the value that you're delivering. What do you mean by that? Well, let me give you some examples. I once found myself in a situation where we had a really large enterprise initiative, and I was always kind of looking over my shoulder at one or two of the stakeholders, and one in particular stakeholder had kind of this slightly different agenda than making the whole product better. Their agenda was really leaned more toward, hey, what's in it for me? I need my little piece of this to make sure that we get this thing done. And, you know, I tried to explain, you know, in some ways that, hey, we can't, you know, because I was, again, balancing that whole political nature of the thing. Look, we, We are getting to your thing, but your thing, it's not time for it yet. And I tried to say it in words that, you know, I was trying to like please the masses, right? Anything I could say in a stand up or in a sprint planning session, you know, it could probably be taken out of context by that one or two member stakeholder team there. Because their agile mindset and the methods by which the team was operating were just a little immature. We were just kind of starting out on the journey there, and I was trying to kind of bring them along. So oftentimes I found myself, as a result of this, sequencing work items that really didn't make sense because there was a real sense of political pressure to work on things to ensure that all the stakeholders were just happy, right, about the direction. So I was sequencing things that just didn't make sense because I wanted to satisfy the masses. And as we all know, you're not going to make everybody happy. You're not going to make all your customers happy all the time. And your stakeholders are the same as your customers in a lot of cases, okay? So the outcome was what you probably already expect. And you know this because I'm sure I'm not the only person in the world who gets this kind of opportunity or problem presented, right? So we weren't delivering the value at the rate that I felt like we should have been because we seemed to be toggling between work types and items and even not paying much attention to what we could successfully demo as something that was potentially shippable as a result. So how do we get around that? Well, it's all about context switching and resocialization. I'm going to get into the resocialization of the plan in just a minute, but this context switching issue is one to defend against, and it takes the whole team to be bought into the principle that lots of context switching is just bad, okay? It's really bad. So here are some things that we can do to maybe protect from that. So first, do your homework. I know that sounds simple, but sometimes the simplest thing is the answer. You may have to go back, revisit what you have. You know, you may have to even backtrack a little bit on some prior commitments. But you've got to go back and do your homework to find out where those are first. And this is why it's never a great policy to make those types of commitments too soon, too early in the life cycle of what you're doing. The bigger point here, though, is that you have to make sure that you're using your time wisely. And that means, are you focusing on the right thing? See, there's very little value. Listen, there is very little value in hyper-focusing on the nature of the politics because those will always exist. There's very little value in hyper-focusing on that to avoid all of it or even to play along just to keep your head above the political waters. There's way more value in understanding what you're really trying to deliver. And when you define that, you can work backwards into your plan, of course, and map this thing out properly. But that's something that you're likely not going to be doing alone, which brings me to the next thing to help us get around this, and that is talking to the team about sequencing. The reason I'm saying this is because you may have just very well fallen victim to the issues and the nature surrounding the politics. And so your thinking may just not have been very clear when you started this plan. You've tried to get this thing going in the right direction, but your perspective has not really been driven by the natural progressions that may be needed. Instead, it's likely been driven by who screams the loudest, where the squeaky wheel is, who's standing in the back, who's waiting to pounce when you misspeak in a stand-up or a sprint planning session. And so going back to the team and asking them questions like, hey, what do you feel like is the best way to get us there? We tried it my way. My way sucks. Let's try it yours. No, I'm kidding. But you get what I'm saying. What is wrong with the plan that we have now? Tell me where we are making the mistakes. And look, product owner, be vulnerable. It's not a weakness. It's a strength when it's used properly. And this is the time for that. You're going to be greatly surprised with the feedback here from your team. And let me tell you why. They are feeling the pain of not successfully delivering a little more than you're feeling the political pressures that may exist. And you know what? You're going to gain their respect when you go back and ask them, and that is always a win. So let's get to the resocialization part and what I mean here. And this is big. You have to resocialize what it is that you are planning. I mentioned it a little earlier that you have to maybe backtrack on some commitments, and you probably know what those are at this point. And it could have been that you agreed to deliver something that was a little more or a little better maybe than what you could have or what the team agreed to even, you know, and that stinks. But of course, before you do that, you got to make sure you have your feet firmly on the ground. You got to make sure you know where you are and where you are going. And the team is going to help you with that. You have to point out the things that we're doing that don't make sense. You have to reflect and inspect and adapt on the delivery of your message. You have to plug in the big ideas here when you're repackaging the message for re-socializing what you're doing. Make it count. Be confident in it, though. Because after all, it's your job to defend the enterprise and the customer and the team, really, and the value that you intend to bring with this thing. And so you have to be able to communicate these things. And hey, you may be in a hostile environment for that, but this is where your alliances, your coalitions, your share care time and building that trust, like we've always talked about here, they may be able to come in and help you. I told you a long time ago that if you develop a great relationship with one of your primary sponsors, they're kind of like that fire extinguisher in the glass case, right? So check up with them. Find out who you've made the most trust with. See if they can help you fight this little battle, right? A little more effectively, at least. And look, that might come with some trade-offs, but maybe it won't. But you won't know until you try. Now, does that get you cleared out of all of the danger? I don't really know how to answer that in your organization. But whether or not we're cleared of all of the danger, we're still defending the customer and we're defending the team when we're making sure that we have the proper sequencing to deliver what we want to deliver effectively and maximize the value of the work done by the team, which is, again, the job of the product owner. All right. So in the next segment, we're going to talk about the last thing here on my list of the things that we need to stop doing and maybe start doing. This is one that you definitely don't want to miss, so hang tight. Now, I'm not saying these are the only things that we have to stop doing and replace them with things to start doing. I just see that some of these are the bigger ones to pay attention to because there's a much deeper theme behind all of these things. We're either not focusing on the value or we're out of sequence. And all of that stuff impacts delivery and maximizing the value of the work done by the team. So the next one, this is the last one for today's session, is a pretty big one, and I saved the best for last. We have to stop using systems, processes, words, and methods that just aren't working for us anymore. There, I said it. I think of it as unlocking new tools. So when I hear the word, let me give you an example. When I hear the word use case, that means something to me because I'm old school. I read the paper and I learned this stuff a very long time ago. And guess what? I didn't overcomplicate it. I didn't overprocess it. It was easy to follow. It made sense to me. And for me, it was a way to define user and system behavioral expectations and identify the things that we may have overlooked and not considered. Boil it down. That's what the purpose and intent was. So we talk about fit for purpose and things like that. Look, what I'm finding in the field is that we are consuming ourselves with over-processing stuff. And look, you don't need to use a use case if that's not the right application of a use case. Make the tool work for you, okay? Unlock new tools. So if it's not meeting the goal, it's not helping the team to work better, or it's overly processed, it's not a lean thinking method, we're wasting a lot of time, we're reworking a lot, we have comprehensive documentation, then why are we continuing to do it? I know what you're thinking. Sometimes we're mandated by other organizations within our organization who have their hands in the pot too much and they're telling us what to do. They're dictating the process to the team. So what can we do, right? I mean, kind of throw our hands up here and say, just forget about it. I'm not going to fight the good fight. No. Here's some things that we can maybe try to start trimming some of the fat around our methods. I think of it no differently, really, than what we actually do with development in the agile mindset. We have a theory, we build the thing, we test the theory, then we improve the product, right? So first, what do we always start with in agile development? We should be starting with data, right? So track the time you're spending on that process versus the real time it's in real development, right? Build the case with the data. Without that, you're going to be stuck. They're going to say, well, you're just assuming that, right? But don't be stuck with an assumption that you're bringing to the table without clear evidence that it is an issue, right? Lead time, cycle time, all that stuff. Metrics can be your case to move forward. And the next thing you want to do you want to try it out. Try the new thing without the heavy process. You can even do that in parallel, you know. Make sure you're not getting into trouble, hot water, with your organization, but you have a baseline already, you know, of what you may consider like throughput, right? So compare that to the new way of doing it and write it down. And I've always said this, plan it in Excel, sell it in PowerPoint. And hey, product owner, you have to have some salesmanship here. We've talked about that in other episodes as well. Now, you probably have a good idea of what will be acceptable for the powers that be, and you may have to negotiate that some. But even if we negotiate some and we don't get all of what we want, I think, again, agile development mindset, right? We're at least leaning toward progress. We're getting some buy-in. We're getting some traction, and we're at least on the journey to improve, right? Now, before I leave this segment, I want to offer to you that I didn't get to the part about language, terms, and words, and those are important. I have an older episode about domain language and what that's all about, but before I start wrapping this up and landing this plane, I have to make sure I mention to you, be bold with love, of course, in correcting people when they're using the wrong language or the word or the term or the definition, right? If the definitions are not usual and customary, if they are not within the framework or the context of what your organization intends to mean by that word, you have to correct folks on that. You're the product owner. You have to advocate for this. You have to start them on the journey of correction, which is really the journey of understanding and learning. The way to do that is to just ask them when they use it. I mean, again, go back to simple. Right? Go back to simple. They use a term. You ask them, what do you mean by that? Or, hey, look, when they use the term, it seems a little out of context or misapplied. Just go simple on them. Go simple. Help me understand what you mean by MVP or use case or even acceptance criteria or even definition of donor working agreement. When you get the answer, you're getting them on the journey because you're going to correct them, right? And the thing to remember here is that we're all on a different part of the journey, which really leads me to landing this plane and getting off of this crazy, crazy planet. So you are on a different part of the journey than most because you've been listening to real world guidance and experience from this podcast. Yes. And you've been using external references that I've shared, and you've been applying all of this learning into your journey, all in an effort to learn how to work better. Right? And you are more capable than you think you are. So I'm offering some encouragement to you, product owner. You're more influential than you may believe. Give yourself some credit here. You are, in fact, the product owner, right? The organization and your customers are counting on you to make better products, better solutions, and just really make their life better. So in the spirit of this episode, we have to stop behaving like we are new to the game, like we don't have a voice, and we need to start recognizing that we are more seasoned in this journey than most are, and that's just going to help us tie behaviors to results. You always want to tie your behaviors to results. That's the thing to start doing, okay? So be bold in your journey. Reflect and evaluate the things that you're doing now. Look through the lens of contrast and compare and see what you should be focusing on and what you should stop focusing on, what you're doing and what you should start doing and stop doing, right? Remember, it's all about small goals too. You're not going to save the world and change the world all at one time, but you can make it a better place, and that's what we're trying to do. So thanks again for joining me on this journey. I look forward to the next one. Shoot me an email at scott@planetproductowner.org. Give me some feedback, content suggestions, and maybe you just need some help. By the way, real quick before we go, looking forward to building this planet out a little bit more. It's in development as we speak, and I know everybody's excited. So tell three friends about it and have a safe, fun, lean journey, my friends.